home, with Dolly dressed a festive hall.
With Dolly dressed a festive hall.
Be merry,
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 merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry,
merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry,
merry, merry, merry, merry, merry,
merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry,
merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry,
merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry,
merry, merry, merry, merry, merry,
merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry,
merry, merry, merry, merry,
merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry, merry,
merry, merry, merry, merry, merry,
merry,
Good morning. Welcome to East Shore Unitarian Universalist Church. I'm Julia Katowski, a member of your Board of Trustees. You are welcome here. No matter your age, your size, the color of your eyes, your hair, your skin, you are welcome here. No matter whom you love or how you speak or whatever your abilities, you are welcome here. Whether you come with laughter in your heart or tears, you are welcome here. If you come here with an open mind, a loving heart, and willing hands, you are welcome here. If this is your first time attending, we hope that you will join us for coffee hour following the service. If you are new to Unitarian Universalist faith, you can speak to any one of our members, and we also have pamphlets in the narthex.
Please rise now as you're willing and able and open your hymnal, the gray hymnal, to number 361. Enter, rejoice, and come in. Years in the United Kingdom, there's been a growing trend of every major corporation to produce very short films, just a couple of minutes long, to air right around Christmas. They aren't really advertisements for their products or services, and they aren't necessarily music videos, though some of them are. There was one little film a couple of years ago that went viral globally. It was based on a true story of a Christmas Eve truce in 1914, the first year of World War I. The guns fell silent as soldiers in the trenches on both sides of the no man's land received letters and packages from home, and they shared stories of their holiday traditions. Through the quiet, the English troops could hear the Germans singing Stille Nacht, and they joined in singing Silent Night in harmony. At daybreak, a young man, a boy really, came out of one of the trenches with his hands up. He was met by another boy on the other side who joined him and shook his hand as all of the other soldiers waited with their fingers on their triggers. But soon everybody followed. They introduced themselves to each other. They took photographs together. They played ball. They even exchanged gifts. The story, though not factually precise, is true. 104 years ago, in the early days of the bloodiest war in human history, there was a peace for a few hours between enemies. We know what happened because of the huge number of letters from and diary entries by the men who were there on both sides. That's what we want this time of year to be. We want to feel connected by peace. And that's what's so great about Christmas. It feels unifying. For a little while in December, people feel connected across the world through family, through shared experiences like grocery shopping and everything pumpkin spice. We feel unified through the shared story of the birth of an innocent baby, born in a stable far from home, who grew up to become a radical and to change the world forever. This time of year is Advent, the time of waiting for that which we know will come. The date that baby's birth is celebrated will arrive, and the longer days that are just around the corner, not to mention spring, the light we know will return. And so we gathered, surrounded by thousands of these little lights in this forest that we dragged in from outdoors, to celebrate together the hope for peace we seek this season and the mystery of how to make that happen.
Please open your gray hymnals to number 447. As Rev Denis lights our chalice, the symbol of our commitment to our shared promise, let's read together the words of Albert Schweitzer. At times, our own light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude of those who have lighted the flame within us.
When our light goes out, we signal that we need it rekindled by others by sharing our celebration and our sadness in this book, which lives out in the narthex all week long. These joys and cares that we share, the milestones of our lives, we share them early in our service so that we can keep them and hold them under the beacon of light and hope. Our joys and cares are at the center of our worship. They ground us. They ground our time together. As you came in, there was a bowl of stones on the little pedestal near the book. If you took one, or if you brought a stone from somewhere else, I want to ask you now to hold on to that stone, to feel its size and shape and texture as you breathe and listen. John Banks writes that after 6 months, the immigration office has finally seen his application. They requested a rather large amount of information and documentation. No word yet on whether it's approved or not, but after months and months of anticipation, at least they've seen and have gotten to the file. And Kathy Dean's granddaughter, Thea Marine Ratchford, was born November 30th in Pasadena, California. Mother and baby are doing great. J.T. Hillen and Barb Opie, both members of the Saturday Morning Covenant Group, are at Fairmount in Breckenridge Village, recovering nicely from surgery. Barb will need a few months for her knee to heal completely after being broken, but she's surrounded by family and friends. JT still has pneumonia, but she's responding well to treatment, and she has her son David with her from Florida for as long as she needs him. Roger Dixon will be in for day surgery on Wednesday and needed accompaniment from his home in Cleveland Heights to the hospital in Mentor. He reached out to our church community through the listserv and got a surprising amount of offers to help him. So I want to thank each one of you for being there for him and for each other. And I want to ask you to keep him in your thoughts on Wednesday. I'm happy to report that as a direct result of our association with Lakeland Community College and Forbes House back in October, First Unitarian Church in Cleveland last week had its first Brain Trust meeting to begin a silent witness project there for Cuyahoga County. And Dorothy Lemmy, the founder of our own silent witness project for Lake County, was part of that meeting. It's off to a great start. So continue to hold on to your stone as we send out our best wishes for the victims of the most recent violence in France and for the people of Yemen as more fall victim to the violence and food shortage, and for the leaders of all the nations of the world that they may find the strength and resolve to work for peace and cooperation and to reverse climate change. For these and for all the joys and cares that remain unspoken but nonetheless felt and prayed for, we observe a moment of silent meditation. I'd like to invite you now to come forth with your stone and place it in the bowl on our altar so that it can eventually become part of our landscape. Václav Havel wrote, "We must divest ourselves of our egotistical anthropomorphism, our habit of seeing ourselves as masters of the universe who can do whatever occurs to us. We must discover new respect for what transcends us, the universe, for the earth, for nature, for life, and for reality. A respect for other people, for other nations, and for other cultures can only grow from a humble respect for the cosmic order and from an awareness that we are part of it, that we share in it, and that nothing of what we do is lost, but rather becomes part of the eternal memory of being. And so we say, may we each remember that we are part of the cosmic order. May we respect it humbly and nurture it with awareness. Amen. And the people said, amen. I'd like to invite you now to remain seated and open your gray hymnal to number 391, Voice Still and Small. Something about this time of year that makes children's stories more relevant to adults. Not just stories about Christmas, but stories about wonder and mystery and hope. Stories that bring us together and unite the past with the future. This morning I'd like to share with you a story called A Lamp in Every Corner by Janine Grossmeyer. Many years ago, in the land of Transylvania, in a mountain valley watered by quick rushing streams and shadowed by great forests of beech trees, there was a village of small wooden houses with dark shingled roofs. The people in the village were of the Unitarian religion, and they wanted a church of their own. A church set on the hillside, they decided, looking down upon the village as a mother looks down upon her sleeping child. So all the people of the village labored long and hard to build themselves a church. The stonemasons hammered sharp chisels to cut great blocks of gray stone, then set the stones into stout and sturdy walls. The glaziers made tiny glass panes and fitted them neatly into the windows with leaded lines. The foresters sawed tall beech trees into enormous beams and laid the trusses for the roof, then covered it with close-fitting wooden shingles that wouldn't leak a drop of rain. The carpenters carved wood for the pair of wide opening doors, setting them on strong pegs so that the doors hung straight and square. A bell was brought from a faraway city, then hoisted by ropes with a heave and a hoe to the top of the tower. The weavers wove fine cloths for the altar table, cloths embroidered with flowers and edged with lace, just like the one there behind glass. The smiths hammered black iron into the tall lampstands and hammered thin bronze into shining oil lamps. Finally, when the building of the church was done, the painting could begin. The painters mixed bright colors, royal red and shimmering gold and brilliant blue, and everyone in the village came to decorate their church. They painted flowers. They painted trees. They painted designs around the windows and different designs around the doors. And at the end of the day, when it was finished, when their church was finally done, all the people of the village stood back to admire it and then to sing a song of happiness and praise. Their village had a church now set on the hillside, looking down upon the village as a mother looks down upon her sleeping child. "We will eat now," announced an elder of the village, because everyone was hungry after a long day's work. "And later tonight, we will come back and pray." So the people of the village went down the hillside to their homes and their suppers, all except one little girl named Zora and her father, who stayed behind. They had brought their own bread and cheese. They ate their food slowly, sitting on the grass on the hillside and admiring their new church with its strong stone walls, its tall tower, and its magnificent bell. After they had eaten, they went back inside, opening those carved wooden doors to go into the gloriously painted sanctuary. "Oh, look, Father," cried Zora, running from picture to picture with her footsteps echoing off the stone walls. "See how pretty the church is?" She stopped in the center of the church and twirled around slowly. "How grand," she cried. "Yes, it is," said her father, looking around and nodding with pride. "Yes, it is." "But Father," she said suddenly, "we've not finished." "What do you mean?" "There are tall iron lampstands all along the walls, but there are no lamps. The church will be dark when the people come back." "Ah, no, little one," said her father. "The light of the church comes from its people. You shall see." He rang the bell to call the people to worship, then took his daughter by the hand and led her back outside. They waited on the grassy hillside next to their beautiful church of strong gray stone. The sun had set behind the mountains, and night was coming soon. Yet in the growing darkness, tiny points of light came from many different directions and moved steadily up the hill. "Each family is entrusted with a lamp, little one," her father explained. "Each family lights its own way here." "Where's our family's lamp?" "Your mother is carrying it. She will be here soon." The many lights moved closer together, gathering into one moving stream, all headed the same way, growing larger and brighter all the time. Zora's mother arrived, bearing a burning oil lamp in her hands. The father lifted Zora so she could set the family's lamp high in its tall iron stand. All around the church, other families were doing the same. Soon, the church was ablaze with light in every corner, for all the people of the village had gathered to pray and to sing. All through the worship service, Zora watched the lights flicker and glow. She watched her family's lamp most of all. When the service was over, her father lifted her high. She took the shining bronze lamp from the lampstand. Its curved sides were warm and smooth in her hands. Her mother carried the lamp home with the flame lighting the way. The lamp flame lit their house when they returned. Zora washed her face and got ready for bed by the light of that flame. "Mother," Zora began as she climbed into bed and lay down. "Yes, little one?" her mother asked, tucking the red wool blanket around Zora's shoulders. "Father said the light of the church comes from its people." "Yes. But also, the people take their light from the church." Over on the table by the fireplace, the shiny bronze lamp was still burning. "And we have that light every day." "Yes, indeed," said her mother. "And even when we're not in church, even when the lamp is not lit, we carry the light of truth in our minds and the flame of love in our hearts to show us the right way to be. That light, the light from truth and love, will never go out." "Never?" asked Zora. "Never," said her mother. "And this bronze lamp will last for many, many years. When you are grown, we will give the bronze lamp to you. And when your children are grown, you will give the lamp to them. And all of you will carry it back and forth to church every time." there's only one lamp, Zora said. So make another and let the light grow. And someday tell your children to make more lamps too. And now, good night, her mother said, and kissed Zora once on the cheek and once on the other cheek and once on the forehead. Zora closed her eyes and drifted into dreams while her mother looked down upon her sleeping child. The years passed. Zora grew. The bronze lamp came into her care. She kept it polished and clean, and when the bell rang out across the valley to call the people to worship, she carried the lamp back and forth to church on the hillside, the flame always lighting her way. When the time came, she made more lamps and gave them to her children, who made more lamps and gave them to their children. And so it went on through the years, even until today. And always, the light of truth and the flame of love from outside that Unitarian church on the hillside continue to grow and show them and us the way.
Christmas time of rich content, we wish for old and young, a time of childhood merriment, and trees with garlands hung. When rich and poor alike may share true happiness and friendship rare. Peace throughout the year, in every land we pray, that nations need no longer fear, nor dream of war's array. No greed for gold, no hatred's old, destroy our lives with ills untold.
Our reading this morning is by Reverend Sean Parker Dennison from The Seven Principles in Word and Worship, edited by Ellen Brandenburg. The sixth principle seems extravagant in its hopefulness and improbable in its prospects. Can we continue to say we want world community? Peace, liberty, and justice for all. The world is full of genocide, abuse, terror, and war. What have we gotten ourselves into? As naive or impossible as the sixth principle may seem, I'm not willing to give up on it. In the face of our culture's apathy and fear, I want to imagine and help create a powerful vision of peace by peaceful means, liberty by liberatory means, justice by just means. I want us to believe and to live as if we believe that world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all is possible. There is no guarantee that we will succeed, but I can assure you that we will improve ourselves and improve the world by trying.
Since the beginning of our church year in September, I've been speaking periodically about our seven principles.
Not as a creed or doctrine that we have to adhere to, but as the core of our shared identity that has been evolving since the 4th century. It's more than just the covenant between congregations and our national association. It's a promise between each other about the ideals that we uphold. I've suggested that the first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and the seventh principle, the interconnected web of all existence of which we are a part, are held in tension. The first is about the primacy of the individual, and the seventh is about our responsibility to the collective. Our seven principles, thought of politically, are libertarianism versus communitarianism. And all the other principles, the second through the sixth, are the methods we use to strike a healthy balance between the two, to avoid the effects of rampant individualism or mindless groupthink. You can find the seven principles printed at the front of either hymnal. I've already been through the first five, so this morning I want to talk briefly about the sixth principle, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. As Reverend Sean Dennison said, the sixth principle does seem extravagant in its hopefulness and improbable in its prospects. After all, humans aren't perfect. We set goals for ourselves that may be impossible to reach. We want to sow peace and reap the harmony of a global community, rich in all its diversity. But more often, we seem to create individualism and exclusivity. And frankly, nationalism. All in the name of protecting our families and our immediate neighbors. Unitarian Universalists, I know, are just as flawed as the rest of humanity. Every once in a while, just once or twice a year, I receive a call, letter, email, Facebook message, or tweet from somebody who is disappointed in us as a congregation. Usually the word hypocrite is in their message, something along the lines of, "You claim to be holy people, yet when I visited on Sunday, during the service or in the coffee hour afterward, somebody said something that offended me." Now, I'll admit that as often as not, that somebody was me. I know offense is often taken where none is intended. And usually the offense says as much about the offended as it does about the offender. So I always respond the same way. We come to this place every Sunday not because we're perfect, but because we want to be better. Each of us knows we can't do it alone. We need people to lovingly point out our transgressions, forgive us for them, and most importantly, stay in relationship with us despite our tragic capacity for getting things wrong. We need each other's light in order to see. Our greatest hope is that we will be better together as we try to create that extravagant improbability of world community. And each of us knows that we will mess up in some way. The most challenging thing we ask of each other is to be forgiven and that our relationship will be made stronger as we work for peace, liberty, and justice for all. We all know, I tell people claiming offense, is that if we can't forgive each other, we're here where we promise not to think alike but to journey together, what hope do we have of forgiving others in the world, others who have made no such promise? What chance do we have of forgiving our neighbors whose values are at odds with our own? How can we be peaceful and just and liberatory out in the wider world if we can't practice it here in our faith community? So ultimately, the sixth principle is about hope. Hope that we can come together, each with our tiny little lamp, just like the members of that historic Transylvanian church on the hill. Points of light, making a collective light that allows us to see our work more clearly. and to see each other more clearly in all of our blessed imperfection.
So you know what's magical about this tree? Each one of these teensy little lights is slightly more than 4/10 of a watt of light. 100 lights are only 41 watts. And all the 500 lights of this tree total 205 diffuse watts of light, producing lumens of less than a 40-watt bulb. And yet, it's bright enough to read by at night if you're near it. And yet, it's still soft, mysterious, maybe even a little romantic. There's a way in which these little points of light, like the twinkle light on that tree, don't so much answer the big questions as they illuminate the need to come in closer to reflect on the big questions. Like me, you've probably heard the phrase points of light a lot lately, since the death of President George H.W. Bush, as people have talked about the Points of Lights Foundation he started. I'm not going to engage in the hagiography of the last couple weeks, the reframing of the deceased as saint-like and nearly perfect. There's been plenty of that. But the points of light imagery reminds me that the elder Bush was among the last of a generation that was first and foremost committed to the common good. He was part of a cohort of peers born before the Great Depression and serving on the front lines and home front of World War II, who understood that we all need one another. Mutual need for them knew no politics. Mutual need was neither liberal nor conservative. It was simply human. It still is. We just seem to forget that too easily. And that's the power of the sixth principle. The goal it speaks of isn't just about peace, liberty, and justice for ourselves and our loved ones. It's for everyone, for a world community. Not just our country, but world community. Not America first, but the world first, all nations, together. World community. That's an interesting phrase, isn't it? Some religions have set out quite intentionally to create world community by propagating their own faith, spreading it far and wide across the globe. The idea seems to be that if they can cover most of the world with adherents of their faith, creating a majority in each place, then one country won't want to go to war with another country because they would be fighting people of their own faith. Just a cursory internet search yielded some really interesting discoveries. In 1917, at the end of World War I, the Baha'i faith published a series of documents called the Tablets of the Divine Plan, with the lofty goal of world community and a plan for how to get there. For Buddhists, the idea of Sangha, or community, stretches across the globe such that ordinary monks are each responsible for leading adherents in noble discipleship of world community. A Benedictine monk, Friar John Main, sought to inspire world community through Christian meditation centered around the Maranatha mantra. Maranatha means, "Come, Lord." Even the Evangelical Church in America issued a social statement, "World Community, Ethical Imperatives in an Age of Interdependence," back in 1970. I don't know how successful any of these faiths have been in implementing their plans, but I do know that since then, the Evangelical Lutheran Church expanded to include even more formerly separate denominations. Then in the last 15 years, fractured back into three separate denominations over the issue of marrying and ordaining LGBTQ folks. But the ELCA has retained the statement on world community as a historic document. As wildly as aspirational as all of these plans seem, it makes sense that world religions are trying. I know from my own experience in the Catholic Church that at Lent the focus is no longer on self-sacrifice, but instead choosing to eat modestly in solidarity with the poor people of the world who don't have choices. The church focuses a different focuses on a different part of the world each year. So Catholics get to know what life is like for Catholics in other countries that are very different from their own, the countries that aren't always portrayed in the media. The goal is to create kinship around the world. The thing that leaders of all these world religions know is that it's a lot easier to get along with, or at least pretend to get along with, people that you profess publicly to agree with. Unitarian Universalism knows no such ambition. We don't even try to pretend we agree with each other. But we do tend to think that if everyone thought the way we do, the whole world would be a lot more peaceful. Maybe that's true. It sounds a little utopian to me. And speaking of the idea of utopia, this week I learned a new phrase, hope punk. It's a style of utopian fiction writing that's been around for a while, but only labeled last year when the term was coined by Alexandra Rowland. She initially defined hope punk as the opposite of grim dark. Grim dark, I learned, is a style of fiction popular among young adults, which starts with the premise that everyone has at their core evil or madness. But then Ms. Rowland found out, after coining this phrase, that there's a countervailing style called noble bright, which asserts that everyone has at their core good and kindness. So in the last year, as she's talked about the concept, she decided that hope punk isn't about good or evil. Hope punk is about optimism. Hope punk writing, she says, is about resisting the pull of entropy, resisting gradual decline into chaos. Hope punk emphasizes not that the glass is half full or half empty, but instead emphasizes that there's water in the glass, and that that water must be protected in order to preserve life. In other words, hope punk is all about peace, liberty, and justice for all, creating community in a world that seems to be careening toward entropy. I love this imagery. All week I've been happily imagining marauding bands of hope punks arriving in the midst of discord to challenge fear and old ways of thinking. And I've wondered, would they have spiky hair and tattoos? Or would they look like a cross between Karen Carpenter and Jesus, all long hair and flowiness? Hope is that countercultural. It always has been. Jesus offered hope in the midst of oppression, and look where that got him. I want to be a UU version of a hope punk. Maybe part of what San Francisco journalist John Carroll called the Unitarian Jihad about 15 years ago. It was a tongue-in-cheek movement in which everyone got a code name created by an online name generator. Mine is Brother Garrett of Mild Reason. How's that for a hope punk name? More than 160 years ago, Unitarian Theodore Parker said, "I do not pretend to understand the moral universe. The arc is a long one. My eye reaches but little way. I cannot calculate the curve and complete the figure by experience of sight. I can divine it only by conscience. And from what I see, I am sure it bends toward justice." It was radical then. One might even say punky. More than 50 years ago, Martin Luther King Jr. said, "The moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice." It was still radical, even punkier. And 10 years ago, when President Obama had MLK's quote literally woven into the round rug in the center of the Oval Office, it was still punky. A lot of people, especially Obama's supporters, complained that this idea of the universe bending toward justice seems to smack of determinism, of predestination. It seems to say that if the moral universe is destined to get better, we don't have to do anything to make it happen. I don't think Parker meant it that way. Knowing what I know of his life and work, I think he meant that the moral arc of the universe is bending toward justice because we're making it bend toward justice. We all seek, by our very nature as human beings, to make things better. We work to make things better. And we have to keep bending that arc, especially when things look bleak. Not because we think that it'll bend toward utopia, toward perfection, but because we have to believe that our efforts to change everything in the long run will change everything, if not now. And it'll never reach perfection. We'll just keep moving in that direction if we keep doing the work. The work is justice. The tool is liberty. The attitude is peace. But the goal is world community. That's our sixth principle. You're invited now to sing a song of the civil rights movement, a black spiritual that we sing with reverence for the black American experience, hope that despite all evidence to the contrary and the bleakness of the world as it is for certain people, there really is more love somewhere, and it will be found. So please open your hymnal to number 95 and rise in body or spirit, for there is more love somewhere. There is more love somewhere. A lot of people in the world have to remind themselves of that every single day. Their lives are so full of oppression and violence or poverty that they need to remind themselves. Some of the folks are here right now among us, even if we can't tell from looking at them. My hope, though, is that when we gather in this place, we feel like there is more love right here. And that we'll keep on trying until we're able to see it. The love that's here feels obvious to me. It's obvious in the ways you all care for each other as you tend to the needs of the world. It's obvious in the ways you share your resources with partner organizations like Women Safe and the Silent Witness Project. So we offer the best we have as generously as we can to help those among us and those in our community. This morning's offering will now be accepted. And if you're visiting for the first time, please let the collection basket pass you as our guest. Thank you for being here.
Your Board of Trustees, thank you for all that you do for East Shore Unitarian Universalist Church. Your contributions of your presence and time are greatly appreciated. Also, thank you for your financial support, which is also so important to keeping this community thriving.
The words of Robert Mabry Doss. For all who seek God, may God go with you. For all who embrace life, may life return your affection. For all who seek a right path, may a way be found, and the courage to take it step by step.
After Coffee Hour is a new-to-UU class focusing on theology. Everybody is welcome, especially if you're new to our faith, but You're welcome even if you've been here for a while and you feel like you could learn a little bit more about who we are. Wednesday afternoon, the seventh principal group will be gathering, and in the evening, there's a meeting of the membership committee. On Thursday evening, safety and security will be meeting in the community room at the same time as beverages and banter is happening at the Panera on Menor Avenue, way out east by Kohl's. Next Sunday is the Christmas pageant. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't miss that for the world. So make sure that you have your camera with you. And next Monday is Christmas Eve. We'll have our traditional candlelight service at 6 p.m. On New Year's Eve, Bree Bird and Mary McGovern are hosting a potluck party. So if you want something safe and sane to do that night, this may just be the perfect thing for you. During the week between the holidays, it's going to be really quiet around here. But for January 13th, we have just scheduled a congregational conversation with Reverend Renee Rahutsky, our UUA staff representative from the region. The time to talk about our priorities. We're facing some big changes here. We have a lot of work ahead of us, and she's going to help us make decisions together about how to proceed and where to start. Your presence is needed. So please, put it on your calendar. I'd like to invite you now to rise and join hands for our bond of union. If you don't know it, it's printed in the order of service. We join hands in Unitarian Universalist Covenant, pledging ourselves to an individual religious freedom which transcends all creeds, not to think alike, but to journey together.